Hello and welcome to Mysteries of Science. My name's Stevie and I'm the Deputy Editor of Science and Nature, the monthly magazine from the team behind The Week Junior.
And I'm Michael, the Junior Editor. On this podcast, we take a look at our favourite mysteries of science. These are the strange phenomena and bizarre events that have left scientists scratching their heads and, despite their best efforts, remain well and truly unsolved.
So as this episode is being released on Easter weekend, we thought we'd head to one of the world's most isolated and mysterious places, Easter Island.
Easter Island, that place sounds fun, but I'm guessing it doesn't have anything to do with Easter and Easter eggs, does it?
No. So in fact, Easter Island isn't its actual name, but rather what a group of Dutch explorers called it when they first came across the island on Easter Sunday in 1722. That's 300 years ago. Its native name is Rapa Nui.
And what's so mysterious about it, Stevie?
Rapa Nui is home to around 1,000 large stone statues which have faces carved into them. These are called Moai. People from outside the island have long wondered how its original inhabitants could have built these statues and what purpose they serve.
Well, I think it's time we travelled around the world to get some answers. This is Mysteries of Science. So, Stevie, you said Rapa Nui was one of the world's most isolated places, so where is it exactly?
Rapa Nui is an island in the South Pacific Ocean. So if you want to get an idea of just how isolated it is, you can look it up on Google Maps.
Okay, so I've got it up here. I can see the island. Maybe some of our listeners would like to do the same thing.
Okay, so now press the zoom out button once. Can you see anywhere else?
No, not yet.
Okay, try a second time. How about now?
Still nothing.
Keep going. See how many times you have to zoom out on Google Maps before you can see anywhere else.
Wow, 7 times. It really is in the middle of nowhere.
It really is. So the nearest islands to Rapa Nui, the Pitcairn Islands, are more than 1,000 miles away, while Chile, which is the closest country, is more than 2,000 miles away.
God, it must take ages to get there, and that's even with all the modern forms of travel we have now. So how did people possibly discover it hundreds of years ago?
Well, Rapa Nui was first settled by the Polynesians, who are the indigenous population of a group of islands in the Pacific Ocean. The Polynesians were explorers who travelled the ocean on wooden canoes and they used the stars and the night sky to guide them. It's thought they arrived on Rapa Nui sometime between 800 and 1200 AD.
Impressive. So where do these statues, the Moai, come in?
When European explorers found the island, far later than the Polynesians, they saw that the island's inhabitants had built hundreds of large stone statues with faces carved into them called Moai. These statues stand at an average of 4 metres tall, so that's more than twice the height of an adult human, and weigh 13 tons, which is roughly twice the size of a male African elephant. As you can imagine, this has raised a lot of questions.
I know I've got some. I mean, how did they make these statues? How did they move them all across the island? And why did they have faces carved into them? I think it's time we spoke to our first expert.
Hello, my name is Carl Lippo. I'm a professor of anthropology here at Binghamton University, located in upstate New York. I'm an archaeologist by training, which means I study the past. I study, the present in order to understand what happened in the past. I look at artifacts and materials that people in the past have left on the surface of the Earth and try to figure out the patterns that would best explain, you know, past behavior. Understanding the past is really one of the keys to figuring out what's worked for human societies in the past that led to success, and that gives us information about how we can best navigate our future.
This is Carl Lippo, a scientist who has visited Rapa Nui for research. His interest in archaeology started when he was a child, walking through the woods of Wisconsin in the US.
As a kid, we walk around the lakes of Wisconsin, and in the woods, it wasn't uncommon to find these earthen mounds that were constructed by pre-contact people. You know, they're just these relatively simple piles of earth, shaped often like animals. And I remember as a kid thinking about how, you know, how sort of mysterious these things were, because they're sort of abandoned landscape, you know, this is wooded lots, and wondering like, well, these are really weird, and why would somebody do that? Why would someone get to, you know, go around and systematically make these earthen mounds? And it's sort of what, at the time, I remember thinking as a kid that that, you know, sort of these mysterious landscape, yet it had to make sense to the people who did it.
This curiosity eventually led Carl to Rapa Nui to study the Moai statues. And just like those mounds in Wisconsin, they may have seemed mysterious to modern eyes, but served a very real purpose for those who made them. And when Carl got there, he was astonished by what he saw.
A bit of a mind-blowing place to go to, because, you know, you see these statues in photos and you think, wow, these are really iconic figures that they're sort of on this landscape. But when you get there, you realize, A, how many there are, more than 900 of them, 950 or more, and how big they are, that they are gargantuan. You know, some of these statues are three stories tall, three-story buildings. 30 feet tall.
Wow, 30 feet tall. So imagine standing in front of a three-story building and looking up. That's what it feels like, standing in front of the Moai. But how are they made?
Yeah, the statues very consistently were carved at a quarry, and most of them are carved at a single quarry called Rotoraraku out of a volcanic material, a sort of a compressed volcanic ash. They're carved and shaped in this upright fashion, and then move from uphill, downhill, and left in the standing position. What we think, based on additional analysis we've done about communities, is that individual communities, small groups, kin groups, family groups, got together to participate in this action. And many groups were doing this all at the same time. And what they were doing is bringing these statues, walking these statues from the quarry over a number of miles, depending on where on the island, to locations both inland, but many along the coast, where the community actually lived and did their, you know, daily activities.
Okay, so they carved them in a quarry out of volcanic rock and then moved them across the island. But hold on a minute, did he just say the statues walked, like walking down the street?
Yes, well, not quite. You see, people always wondered how they could have moved these statues all across the island. I mean, remember, some of them are the size of a three-story building. Now, according to Rapa Nui folklore, the statues walked to their final resting spots. Now, people weren't sure what this meant exactly, but Carl and his colleagues came up with one way of moving the statues with ropes. So rather than lying them on the ground and rolling them with tree trunks, for example, they were pulled back and forth with ropes while the statue stayed upright, making it look like they were walking. Here's Carl to tell us more about it.
You know, when most people think about moving a giant heavy object, you think about the ways in which we might ourselves do it. And, you know, with modern equipment, you would use a truck or a crane or some kind of wheel device and lay it on its back and move it around. And people have come up with lots of models about, you know, tree rollers and other things. But we found, though, with the archaeological evidence, you know, when we really studied really carefully the details of how they broke and how they fell and where they're laying, we realized that the only way we could explain that is that they were moved in a standing position, which on its surface seems like the craziest thing ever. If you have this giant statue, why would you move it in a standing up way versus what seems more logical is laying it down and then moving it across because it's more stable. But we realized we couldn't explain how these things broke unless it was moved in a standing position. What that means is that the statues were moved more like a giant refrigerator than, you know, something that you would put on a cart or on its back, that you keep it in the standing position and you rock it side to side. And that because of the shape of the statue, the way it's constructed, it's lean, it's the shape of the base, by rocking it back and forth, it actually takes steps forward. It sort of falls forward and moves forward in sort of a synchronous fashion, allowing sort of you to basically rock the statue side to side and at the same time move it forward. That turns out to be the simplest solution for moving these gigantic objects.
Now, if you're wondering what this might look like, Carl and his team actually built their own Moai statue and filmed themselves moving it with ropes to demonstrate their theory. And you can actually see the video for yourself on National Geographic's YouTube channel under the title Scientists Make Easter Island Statue Walk.
We learned that it actually takes a remarkably small number of people. We were able to move a 5-ton statue with just 15 people and three lengths of rope, and move it relatively quickly, up 100 meters in about 20 minutes. Because in fact, the statue's carved in such a way that it makes that easy to happen. It's not really our smarts. It's the fact that, you know, ancient people who made these statues carved it in such an ingenious way that even dummies like ourselves could, you know, use the energy, the ropes to figure out, and it would move on its own once you start to get it wobbling. It has these, it's meant to walk. So it's really this ingenuity, the ancient ingenuity that made it happen.
So we know how the statues were made, carved from volcanic rock, and now how they might have been moved from side to side as if they were walking themselves. But I guess the big question that remains is why? What do these statues mean to the people of Rapa Nui?
Well, why don't we ask them ourselves? I think it's time we called the other side of the world and spoke to some people from Rapa Nui.
I was born around the 80s, and by then we didn't have many cars. Also, there weren't many people on the island as today. Today we count like 8,000 people and many, many cars. But I remember growing up, I felt free, was a completely beautiful nature, enjoying, you know, life on the shore of the ocean. And it felt, you know, it's a very much of a pristine environment. So it was a very beautiful experience for myself.
This is Tui. She grew up on Rapa Nui and now runs a tour company there with her husband Mark called Green Island Tours and Travel. They also have a YouTube channel called Rapa Nui Life, which shows what it's like to live on Rapa Nui. Here's Mark talking about how they met.
Well, she grew up here till she was 12, and then her mum married a Frenchman, and they went to live in France till she was 20. She came back when she was 20, and then she went to New Zealand to study when she was like 24, and met the man of her dreams when she was 27. And then she met me a little bit afterwards. No, I'm joking.
Mark moved back to Rapa Nui with Tui, and he still remembers the first time he saw the Moai.
I didn't come to the island for the statues. I came because I fell in love with my wife. And so I was actually on my way fishing with the family, and we drove past them. I was like, my goodness, why don't more people know about these? I was just so blown away by the size. And there was, if I remember rightly, I don't think there was any tourists there when I saw it. And so it was like, man, it's kind of just hidden around the corner here. And obviously, since then, I realized that tourists go there, you know, most days, but at certain times of the day, there are more tourists than not. So, yeah, absolutely breathtaking. Marvelous is a good word. Something to marvel at and wonder about how they were able to do it.
For Tui, the Moai was something she was used to seeing every day and just a part of her life growing up. However, her family told her about the very special meaning they have to the people of Rapa Nui.
I feel like the Moai, they were always there, and they were like part of me, you know, like of my existence. I was told that these are the figures of the ancestors, and because in Polynesia, the the bloodlines are very important. Part of our identity, and you know, at the same time, it's like this recognition of oneself with the status, you know, as being of a self, like part of myself. You see what I mean?
So the reason why the Moai have faces carved into them is because they are based on real people, the ancestors of those who lived on Rapa Nui.
All the people around the world talk about the Moai. Moai is the word we use for say a statue. The real name for the statue is Aringa Ora o Te Tupuna. That means the living face of our ancestor. Because we believe when somebody important died, you made a statue, a Moai. This Moai look in some way like the dead person, the face, the nose, the ears, some tattoos in the body. When he died, you put the Moai over one platform we call Ahu, and inside the Ahu you put the dead body, and our belief is the spirit, the mana, the energy that this ancestor entry in the Moai is catch for the Moai like a battery, and from the Moai he have the power, the capacity to help us in our daily life.
This is Leonardo Paccarati. He is a filmmaker from Rapa Nui, and he made a documentary called The Spirit of Our Ancestors, which is about a Moai statue which is being kept in the British Museum in London.
When I visit the Moai Ho'ahakananaia in the British Museum, I feel complete touching, very emotional moment for me, because I feel the desolation that is statue. I feel he is not made for a stay inside a museum. He is made for a stay down the stars, touching for the air, washing for the rain, looking the people, his people, the people, the descendants, the Hinarere, we call Hinarere, the descendants, and know for a stay inside the museum.
Leonardo, along with other people from Rapa Nui, is calling for the statue to be returned back to them. And here he tells us some of the reasons why.
One, because it's not really protected inside the museum. Another, because it's our Moai. It's our ancestor. He had the soul, the spirit, the one great chief. For us, it's very important. All our ancestor stuff returned to the island, because it's the only way the mana, the energy, be balanced again.
Speaking to us, Leonardo also told a story about the first Moai and the birth of the Rapa Nui culture.
One man, the name is Kawaheke, have a dream. He dreamed with his father, and the Kawaheke father living in Hiva, our original island, the island with coming. When he wake up in the morning, he stand, the father is die in Hiva, in the original land. He go outside the house, take the first rock he find in the ground, and carving his father's face, and call Te Aringa Ora Otitupuna, the living face, the my ancestor, the my father. And he take the rock and put over the other rock. In this moment, born the Ahu, the platform, and the Moai, the statue. And in that moment, born the Rapa Nui culture. To this moment, the moment the Moai by invading, we are Polynesians like the other Polynesians. But the Rapa Nui Polynesian culture born in the day we create the first Moai. And the men create this Moai name is Kawaheke.
So while the Moai may have been a mystery to European explorers who discovered Rapa Nui on Easter weekend 300 years ago, for the people of Rapa Nui, they are not a mystery at all, but rather an important part of their culture and a way to remember their ancestors.
So we now know how they made these statues, carving them into rock,
and then walked them across the island so they could stand proud, looking out at their descendants. And they still stand there today, as people on Rapa Nui keep their spirit of their ancestors alive.
And so while something that may have appeared like a giant mystery at the start to us and to European explorers actually has a fascinating answer, and the way we can solve these mysteries is to ask people, learning about new cultures and finding out more about this amazing world we live in. We'd love to hear your thoughts about Rapa Nui and the Moai. Email hello@science-nature.co.uk to share your thoughts with us, either with a written message or a video recording. Here's a question that was sent in to us by Nahurai.
I want to know if time travel is possible.
What a great question, and perhaps one we'll answer on a future episode of Mysteries of Science.
Don't forget to pick up the latest copy of The Week Junior Science and Nature for even more mysteries.
We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about the legendary Kraken, a terrifyingly enormous sea monster that attacks ships and stalked the nightmares of sailors for centuries. Join us and some expert guests as we go on a journey into the deepest depths of the ocean. Until then, stay curious.
Thanks for listening to The Week Junior Show, which is made by the same people that make The Week Junior magazine. You can get a free trial of The Week Junior by heading to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast and using the code podcast at checkout.